This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us once more here on the Josh, Craig, and Greg Show after a week-long hiatus. Greg, you're doing well today?
I'm going to be doing well as long as our computer doesn't crash again.
That's right, guys. We had a couple of technical difficulties last week, so thank you for your patience. I know you were all waiting with bated breath there for the next show, and finally it is here. But you know, Greg, it's not such a groovy Tuesday today as I would normally say.
It is not.
The reason for that, ladies and gentlemen, I always like to provide a little bit of context because I know some of you may be listening to this a few weeks after the show is produced, but we lost Clarence Clemons, the original big man from Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. He's the saxophonist. He passed away just this past weekend after complications from a stroke, and I've got to be honest with you, it's a pretty sad household in the Craig family right now.
Yeah, I'm sure. I haven't talked to my brother. He's been at home, but yeah. I'm sure he'll talk to me about that when I do get home.
You know, I take solace in the fact, actually, that a couple of years back I had an opportunity to see Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band out in Hamilton, which was only appropriate, being a steel town. And thankfully, before his passing, I had an opportunity to actually see Clarence Clemons perform live. And he earned every bit of that name, the big man. He was fantastic.
He was quite large. I was about to say yes. He was quite large, yeah.
Yeah, he was a large guy. College football player, actually, he was, prior to being a musician.
Interesting.
Very interesting sort of a mix of, I guess, your stereotyped high school type kids. You know, you got the band nerds and you got the college football guys, and he was both rolled into one.
It's a supreme amount of talent.
It is, right there, absolutely. But on to happier things. Greg, you and I know you specifically have been waiting, you've just been excited for months about this week's show.
Yeah, this has kind of been my... I don't want to say just mine, because obviously we're doing this together, but I've kind of had this vision in my head since we started this.
Well, I'm really happy about it, Greg, because I kind of looked to you this week specifically for some extra insight, and you're really going to be taking the reins, I think, this week, which is great. This is your area of expertise, and an education for me, no doubt, will be coming around the corner here.
I said this to my friend this weekend when we were listening to music. I said, if I know the music, I know it.
Yeah.
And it does not hold any more truer than in this instance.
You know this. Well, introduce the theme here, Greg. What are we talking about today?
We will be seeing, on July 2nd, Soundgarden play a show at the Molson Amphitheater. So we had to do a Chris Cornell-themed Josh, Craig, and Greg show.
Fantastic.
And it may sound like it's pretty narrow, the theme, but yeah. it, as we will show you through this next hour or so, probably a little bit more than an hour, that is certainly not the case.
Yeah, Chris Cornell's career really, really is an open book in a lot of ways, and it's not just one genre of music. It's not just one sound. The guy is an incredibly talented human being.
Certainly. So, do you want to get into this?
Well, yeah, let's get into it.
It's kind of a biography here, so we'll just start off. So, obviously, we all know Cornell's from Seattle, Washington. Yep. And we'd be remiss if we did not mention a certain classmate of ours who is diehard Seattle everything, Jans Bunkus. So
yeah,
maybe a bit of a dedication to him, maybe.
Yeah, you know what?
I know he likes Cornell.
This kind of goes out to Giannis here.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Seattle-themed stuff in this. So that's basically, sure. Yeah, we're talking about Seattle, 1984, Cornell with Kim Tail and Hiro Yamamoto. Formed the first incarnation of what would become Soundgarden with Cornell on the drums.
Wow.
Believe it or not, and singing. But so obviously when he wanted to focus on his singing, they went out and found a new drummer. And then eventually that was Matt Cameron, who is still the drummer for the band today.
Yeah.
So with that group in set there, they recorded two EPs, Screaming Life and Flop. Under a very famous record label, Sub Pop, which was huge. Who also at the time of signing Soundgarden had Nirvana, another very small Seattle band, on its record label.
Small that would soon become a giant, I think.
Certainly a sign of things to come. They also had Mudhoney, which is a little bit lesser known, but also a very popular band.
Great band.
But so the strength of those two EPs, they got a bit of a bigger contract with a different record label, and they released mm-hmm. Ultra Mega OK in 1988, and that was their very first full-length album. And I'm going to play a song off that. I chose this song. It's called Beyond the Wheel, and it is just an absolute stunning vocal masterpiece.
Yeah.
Some of the just classic Christopher Cornell screams in here. So we got to get to that.
Very excited. Well, let's do it then. That totally just melted my face, dude.
That's the thing. It's so, you know, as we go along here, like, that's heavy.
That's really heavy.
That is very heavy, and it's going to change. That won't be the whole show, obviously.
It's really, I guess, I mean, I think you've tried to structure this pretty chronologically, if not chronologically.
It's precisely chronological.
And you really do notice an evolution in this guy's sound. Not to say that he ever loses the heaviness, it just, you start to see all the different sides and, you know, facets of Cornell as the show progresses.
Yeah, it probably works a lot like when you're a kid, obviously you like the edgy, like, stuff that you kind of associate when you're a young adult kind of thing.
Yep.
And then you mature and things happen, so that's kind of how it's going to go. But yeah, it's definitely very, very heavy.
Very cool.
So after Ultra Mega OK, they got a lot of publicity, and mm-hmm. they ended up signing a major record label mm-hmm. with a major record label, A&M Records. And they were that made them the very first grunge band, actually, before Nirvana, before, like I said, at this point, Pearl Jam wasn't around, but before Mudhoney,
yep.
Screaming Trees, anything. Or Screaming Trees? I mean, Mother Love Bone, anything.
Yeah.
They were the first ones, so. And they released their very first major label record mm-hmm. in 1989 called Louder Than Love.
Very cool.
Kim Thill said this about this song. We were fed up with the bands beating around the bush, just using euphemisms and metaphors for the sex act. We were simply trying to kick all the lame-ass rock and roll and dance music of the 80s in the butt. It's a parody of the whole genre of stupid rock. Are you interested now?
I'm very interested. My interest has been piqued, if that's what you're asking. Absolutely.
That's what I was trying to say. I was going to use piqued in there. Well, this certainly will do it. So this is Big Dumb Sex off of 89's Louder Than Love.
Fantastic.
Don't
Well, definitely not a song for the faint of heart, is it, Greg?
Not at all. But that, I think that's what makes I think they accomplished exactly what they said they wanted to.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the other thing, too, I mean, we've already said this after the first song, but again, lyrically, I guess the next song actually lyrically shows the diversity of a guy like Cornell.
Yes.
That was very much sort of Kim said it best. I won't reiterate what he said. That quote sort of encapsulated what that song was about. Next, coming up, we've got a release from 1991 called Hunger Strike. Now, this song came out of an album and a band, both titled Temple of the Dog. And this particular song stands as the most successful single from that band's only album. And it was written by Cornell, but it also features a couple of members of what would become Pearl Jam. You've got Eddie Vedder on there doing some of the verses and even some of the choruses. But Cornell sort of opens and closes the song, you could say. And you've also got Stone Gossard in there.
And bassist Jeff Ament.
Yes, you do. And the neat thing there, though, there's still an additional Soundgarden connection. Matt Cameron is drumming on the track, mm-hmm. which is really cool. But talking about the lyrical diversity, this song, I mean, Hunger Strike, leaves very little to the imagination. It was really a comment Cornell was trying to make on sort of the inequity of food distribution around the world, sort of expressing solidarity with the poor and the hungry and saying, you know, we're going to go on a hunger strike. It's interesting because it's a very socialist thing to say, and as we will hear later in the show, he ends up joining the rest of the members of what was Rage Against the Machine to form another band, which we'll talk about. But Rage was always sort of characterized for their use of music as a medium to express their socialist points of view. So it's just these neat little connections that you find when you delve into someone's musical career. So guys, this is Hunger Strike, an amazing song, and I gotta say it, I'm not a huge Eddie Vedder fan, and Cornell just saves this one the whole way through. I absolutely love Cornell here. I can tolerate Vedder in this case, but that's only because he's backed strongly by Cornell.
I think they complement each other well in this scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, again, when you add Cornell into the mix, it's like adding chocolate to something. It's always appropriate.
Well, I don't mind stealing bread from the mouths of decadence. But I can't feed on the powerless when my cup's already overfilled. Yeah. But it's on the table, the fire's cooking, and the farming babies with slaves are working. Blood is on the table and the mouths are choking. I'm going hungry. Yeah. I don't mind stealing bread from the mouths of decadence. But I can't feed on the powerless when my cup's on the table, the fire's cooking, and the farming babies and the slaves are out working, and it's on the table, the mouths are choking.
Something interesting about that song is that so Ament and Gossard were a part of Mother Love Bone, who that album was kind of created for the singer of Mother Love Bone, Andrew Wood, who died of heroin. And so they were left without a band, and they were actually auditioning singers for the band Mookie Blaylock, who would become Pearl Jam. And it just so happened that when they were at practice, Eddie Vedder had made his way up from Los Angeles to do his audition. And he's just at the practice. And Cornell was having problems finishing that song.
Yeah.
And Vedder just kind of like stepped in. And so, yeah, we say, oh, he saves the song. Yeah, but, you know, but in Cornell's mind, or maybe some other people's minds, you know, they are imperative to each other.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I didn't want to come off saying that I have no respect for Vedder. He's not my favorite singer. I feel, I think you and I have talked about this before, I do feel that at times Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam are sort of perhaps unfairly considered sort of the big, great, super talented grunge band, and I think it sometimes overshadows Soundgarden. But one other thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but I was under the impression that Cornell was actually the roommate of Mother Love Bone singer as well.
He was, yes.
Okay, so and so they all, this is the neat thing about these things, is everybody seems to know each other from that Seattle scene. It's it's a pretty neat sort of a storybook going on there.
Yeah,
they're
definitely a tight family.
Very cool.
You could say.
Very cool.
So I guess we'll move on in his career.
Yeah.
So that would be, so after Temple of the Dog, so he went back to Soundgarden.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we should say Ben Shepherd really replaced Hiro Yamamoto on the bass. Mm-hmm. So this is the lineup that most people are familiar with.
This is the lineup that we'll be seeing on the second?
This is the lineup we'll be seeing on the second, yeah. Yep. Ben Shepherd, Matt Cameron, Kim Till, Christopher Cornell.
Mr. Christopher Cornell. So this is off an album called Bad Motorfinger, which is actually released the same year as that Temple of the Dog album in 91. What sort of maybe an interesting factoid about this song before we get started is, you know, it was a single and there was a video produced for it. But what's kind of interesting about it is there were two versions of the video, one for the U.S. and international market and another for the Canadian market. And with all the research I've done, I can't seem to really find a reason why that happened. It wasn't censored in one case or another. Do you have any insight on that, Greg?
Not a clue in the world.
Yeah. Maybe they just thought us Canucks were special and deserved a little extra attention in our own unique video. Who knows? But ladies and gentlemen, this is Outshine off 1991's Bad Motorfinger.
Keep the movie rolling.
Josh, I want you to think of something.
Okay, I'm going to think.
We'll go back to August of 1991.
Okay.
And a little album by the name of Ten is released by Pearl Jam.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, you listen to it for a month, you're like, oh, this is wicked. And then less than a month, about a month later, Nirvana,
Ugh.
Nevermind is released.
Unreal.
Oh, it's not done yet. I'm not done yet.
It's not done yet.
And then in October, Bad Motorfinger, which had that song we just listened to, Outshined, on it.
What a year.
You're talking about, like, when was the last time three good albums came out in 3 years?
Well, three, not just good albums, three, like, defining albums.
Exactly.
Of not only three separate bands, but a genre out of the same city, out of the same scene.
Yes. You're talking 30 million copies of records were sold between those three albums. It just in the United States alone.
That's
not worldwide. So
it's unreal.
So obviously, with those three albums kind of helping the scene to explode, there was a little movie made. The movie was actually made before those albums were released, but it wasn't released until just shortly thereafter. It was early in 1992. There was a movie called Singles, which was based. It was about four like 20-something-year-old adults living in the city of Seattle, and basically just kind of following them around their relationship quarrels and whatnot. And it's actually probably more well known for its soundtrack. And all of the big bands from Seattle were in it at the time: Alice in Chains, Mudhoney, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, obviously. And they had Jimi Hendrix stuff in there. He's from Seattle.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And but also on there was one solo song written by Cornell, which is it's if you know it, you love it. Basically, it's not a very popular song, but it is a very special song, I think. And it's called Seasons. It was actually the made up band in the movie. Citizen Dick was the name of the made up band, but they had an EP, and this was one of the songs that was on the fake album.
Oh.
It was called Seasons.
Very
so
cool.
So Cornell took it upon himself to write a song called Seasons, and this was the result. Here you go.
And the
So with the movie Singles, mm-hmm. which I highly recommend seeing, it's pretty interesting movie. It's interesting, if not just for the to see, like, Cornell has cameo in it.
Oh, for real?
Just a little short one, and they show Soundgarden playing in the club. They show Alice in Chains playing in a club.
Oh, I gotta go see this.
Eddie Vedder and Jeff Ament play in that fake band.
Oh, do they?
Citizen Dick. Eddie Vedder's the drummer, and the singer of the band is Matthew Dillon.
Oh, get out of here!
He's probably the biggest guy in the movie.
Why do I feel like I've seen that scene before? As soon as you say Matt Dillon on stage singing in a band, I feel like I've seen that somewhere. It must have been on TV or something if this was ever played. I don't know. It seems familiar.
If for nothing else, just go see it just for the
the cameos.
Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, so with the success of the movie and obviously the booming grunge scene in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
The NBC asked the director, Cameron Crowe, who's probably most well-known for directing Jerry Maguire, to parlay the movie into a television series.
Yeah.
He basically told them to eat shit. And so NBC picked up the show, the concept of it, moved it to New York City, added two extra characters.
Uh-huh.
And called the show Friends. You ever heard of that show?
I have heard of that show.
Yeah, man.
Somewhere way back in my memory, it's sparking something here. It's mildly familiar, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a little fun fact there.
Well, there you go.
So after that movie, mm-hmm. obviously, with the biggest, with Seattle booming,
mm-hmm.
Cornell and Soundgarden went back into the studio.
They go back into the studio, and in 1994, they come out with Super Unknown, and... You know, being familiar with some of his earlier stuff and enjoying it, I have to be honest, this is really where Soundgarden grabbed me by the shoulders and shook me. This is really, really sort of where I really start to love Soundgarden beyond almost any other band. The song we're going to play now is actually called Super Unknown, just like the album. Much like Temple of the Dog named an album after themselves, Temple of the Dog. So Super Unknown here is just an unbelievable song. It is my personal favorite Soundgarden song ever. I say this rarely. I've mentioned it about a couple of things, but this isn't just a rock song. This is real, true rock and roll as far as I'm concerned. I melt when I hear this song. And it's interesting because like a couple of my favorite Soundgarden songs, when I first heard it, I sort of went, yeah, that's good, and listened to some of the other singles. The more I listen to this album, the more I come to appreciate this particular song. Important and enough to mention here, though, is that Rolling Stone has really ramped up Super Unknown as an album a bunch of times. They've listed it. It's been included in their top 500 albums of all time, and it actually hit number 38, I believe, in their list of the top 100 albums of the 1990s. So, that's critical success.
Whoa, that's it?
Well, we don't have to agree with what they say.
Well, we don't. Well, I never
but it made the list, which is important.
38 seems kind of low.
Yeah, I mean...
Black Hole Sun?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's how important is that song?
It's a pretty huge song.
Yeah.
But it's not the song we're going to play. Super Unknown. That's
right,
the...
Right, right. I was just saying for, like...
People, no. Absolutely. For people to... Yeah, that's actually... You know what, Greg? That's an important point. We're contextualizing things. For those folks that aren't as familiar with Soundgarden, I think anybody who's ever heard of Soundgarden probably knows the song Black Hole Sun. And yeah, Black Hole Sun came off this album. But, you know, not obviously the only song on the album worth listening to. And we're going to show you maybe a lesser-known one. This wasn't released as a single, but it is an unbelievable song. Guys, this is Super Unknown from 1994's album Super Unknown. Hey! Greg, I need to tell you something about that song. There has been more than one occasion where I've had a half-hour drive plus to go anywhere, somewhere, and I will listen to that particular song on repeat for the entire 30, 45 minutes.
That's intense.
I just, I don't know. I've yet to become sick of that song. I just love it.
That's fair. I do that sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, I just...
Has this happened on multiple occasions?
Have I listened to it on repeat on multiple occasions?
30 minutes?
Oh, yeah,
on
dude.
Multiple occasions?
Oh, yeah.
That's like, that's borderline...
It's borderline creepy, actually.
A little, yeah.
Maybe Cornell needs restraining order or something.
It is okay in this instance, though.
It is. Like
any Cornell instance or Ian Thornley instance.
It's true. It's true. Well, anyways, there's a little bit of my soul. I laid my soul to bear there. I've got a thing for that song.
That song?
I do have a thing for that song as well.
Bad joke, man.
Bad joke. Those of you who know Big Wreck and or have been listening to us in the past will have heard that joke before.
Yeah.
And you'll get it. Otherwise, you know, we won't beat it to death and explain it again.
Fair enough. All right. So what happens next in the career of Cornell?
Well, next... you know, they finish this, the group of Soundgarden, they finish touring with the Super Unknown album and sort of hit the studio pretty quickly after that. And in 1996, they released Down on the Upside, which is an awesome title for an album, I think.
It is a lyric on the album from Dusty, fourth song. It's the fourth song on the album.
Yep. Down on the Upside. Just a great little lyric and a great little song. But... what's interesting about this is that No Attention, which is the name of the song we're going to play, was originally recorded during the band's previous album sessions for Super Unknown. And along with the likes of songs like Tighter and Tighter, it was actually considered a B-side. It was cut off the Super Unknown album and sort of left to collect dust. And when they came back into the studio for Down on the Upside, they sort of revived it, tried it again. The vibe sounded better. And No Attention was then included in this album. And this No Attention is, again, it's sort of a little bit of a sleeper for me, just like Super Unknown was. It was another one of those Soundgarden songs that I tended to overlook. I enjoyed it, but it was not sort of the main draw for me on the album. And again, the more I listened to it, the more I enjoyed it. What really gets me about this song is the breakdown about halfway through where they cut the time signature in half. They really slow it down. It really gives Chris Cornell an opportunity to sort of... show his stuff. The vocals just are, I guess, they seem amplified, they seem ramped up with that halftime signature, and it really creates that very classic sort of grungy sound, that sort of slower tempo driving sound. It's an awesome song. Ladies and gentlemen, this is No Attention off 1996's Down on the Upside.
Now turn straight.
So, unfortunately, this is the saddest moment of the show, I think.
Which is?
In 1998,
mm-hmm.
the guys in Soundgarden,
yeah.
After 14 years, they hung up the plaid, so to speak.
Yeah, and their jack boots there.
Yeah, and that was it. They called it quits. Kim and Ben, they never did anything.
No.
I don't think. Pearl Jam scooped up Matt Cameron to play drums for them.
Yep.
He still plays drums for them.
Yeah, he does.
So he's been doing that since 98. And Cornell would end up, thankfully, to kind of lessen the blow, write his own solo album.
Yep. And I know he only really released the one solo project in 1999 called Euphoria Morning. And it is the only solo stuff we've got from Cornell in between the breakup of Soundgarden and the eventual formation of the band we alluded to earlier in the show, that was comprised of Cornell and all of the members of Rage Against the Machine, minus their lead vocalist, their lead rapper, you could say, Zach. And they formed the band Audioslave. And so Euphoria Morning sort of tided Cornell fans over in the interim between Soundgarden and Audioslave. This song is called Preaching the End of the World. I am, as I've mentioned, I've mentioned a couple of times on the show, names do it for me, and that song title right away grabbed my attention. And it's a really, really great song. And I want the listeners, I mean, you're going to hear a little bit of this later on, but think back to the first couple songs we played in this particular episode. And then I want you to listen to this. We're really seeing a different side of Cornell in a song like this. He's not held down by the genre of grunge, I guess. Not to say that Soundgarden ever attempted to stay within a certain genre, but they weren't, you know, he wasn't necessarily trying to cultivate those fans. He knew he had them. He knew he had a fan base, and he was exploring the other sides of his music, I think. And the album style, a lot of people have suggested, and I think Cornell has confirmed, is really influenced by Jeff Buckley, who is a friend of Cornell's. And actually, you had an interesting story about this during the pre-production here, Greg, a story about a particular song, I think, that's playing in the background right now.
Yes, the song Wave Goodbye is on in the background. That was written as a tribute to Jeff Buckley. And yeah, he certainly was one of his good friends, and he died. I forget how he died.
He drowned in 97,
yes,
from what I understand.
Drowning.
Terrible, but, you know, we're looking at all these connections. This is how prolific this guy Chris Cornell is. He seems to know almost everybody in the music industry in one way or another. We've got Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and all those guys from the Seattle scene. We've got a good friend, Jeff Buckley. This guy's a monster.
Yeah, and we're going to get into him knowing the guys from Rage, and then one also... very different guy.
Yeah, which we're gonna keep you hanging on to find out who he knows there. But guys, this is Preaching the End of the World off 1999's Euphoria Morning.
Hello, I know there's someone out there who can understand and who's feeling the same way as me. I'm 24 and I've got but I know now that it wasn't meant to be. Cause all has been lost and all has been won, and there's nothing left for us to say. But now I know that I don't want to be alone today. So if you find that you've been feeling just the same, come in now, it's alright. It's just the end of the world. You'll need a friend in the world.
after that was released. I guess shortly thereafter, Rage was kind of not broken up, but Zach, like you said, Zach De La Rocha.
Yeah, kind of on the rocks. Zach pursued, that was the word I was going to say, produced, but pursued a solo career of sorts, which was not bad, actually. I enjoyed a couple of his tracks with One Day as a Lion.
Mm-hmm. So he left, and Tom Morello, Brad Wilk, and Timmy C were left without a singer, and Cornell, obviously without his band, was left without a band. And some things are just meant to be.
And I got to be honest with you, Greg, before you continue, I was desperate for some more Rage. I loved Chris Cornell, but when I heard they were getting together, I was very skeptical because Rage's sound seemed so different from Cornell's to me. And I was pleasantly surprised. I really, really was not sure if it was a good combination.
Yeah, obviously you listen to the two predecessors, and it doesn't seem like they would match up stylistically.
Mm-hmm.
But well, I suppose when you're a magnificent artist,
yeah,
you can make things like this work. Obviously, there's lots of... I've heard people say, you know, obviously, oh, it's not as good as the original stuff. But I don't think that's its intention.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really good point.
It's a different
Greg.
Kind of music. So
yeah, they're not trying to recreate Rage. They're not trying to recreate Soundgarden. They were something in and of themselves. And that's a really, I think, important observation there, is that nobody's trying to reinvent the wheel here.
Certainly, yeah. So... yeah, the four of them got together. They released their self-titled album in 2002. Produced hit songs Cochise, yeah. I'm the Highway, and a song we're going to play, which we both are big fans of, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's probably the best. It's probably the best example of them meshing together and kind of making their own kind of sound.
Yeah.
And it's a song called Like a Stone.
Enjoy.
Lost in the pages of a
after Audioslave's first album, they went on to release two more albums, Josh, and it was 2005 they released Out of Exile, and 2006 they released Revelations, both of which were pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Same kind of ordeal as the first one. Some good songs on there. Doesn't Remind Me was kind of popular, and Be Yourself, and a couple songs on there. Original Fire. But it was less than a week after they released Revelations, Cornell came out and said he was leaving Audioslave, which I just found it was strange timing.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, here's Revelations, here's a new disc. Okay, see ya.
Yeah, by the way, I'm probably not going to be around a tour for it.
Right. Which was, I found it a little strange, but at the same time, he left because he had already written a full album of solo material, and he released an album called Carry On in 2007, which has a bunch of good songs. You Know My Name, which was written as the James Bond theme song.
Yeah.
Casino Royale.
I remember that. I actually had no idea he had done that, and I was watching the opening credits and kind of got like, oh my gosh, that's Chris Cornell.
Yes, this is awesome.
Yeah, you know, that's actually kind of not fair, because that was a great movie too. I mean, it was a great, it sort of revitalized the 007 franchise, and it was unfortunate for me because it really, that song overshadowed the rest of the movie for me.
Yeah, so after that album, we're running out of time kind of, so we kind of have to skip parts here. But this is one part that we cannot skip, because in 2009, Cornell collaborated with a very peculiar,
an interesting choice, yeah,
person.
And I mean, this is what we alluded to again earlier in the show.
Yes,
we've been keeping you hanging on there. So, Greg, drop the bomb. Who was it?
Timbaland.
Timbaland.
Yes, the famed hip hop producer.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He and Cornell collaborated on the 2009 album Scream. And I love it. That's just me, though. Obviously, I love Chris Cornell a lot, judging by this show. But I just think that there's a bunch of, you know, there's moments on the album that certainly you can see what a fantastic songwriter Cornell is.
Yeah, and I think to have a show that's appropriately dedicated to someone like Cornell, whether you like it or you hate it, or whether you agree with his collaborations or not, you can't leave this out.
Not at all.
It's an essential part of the Cornell story, and you know, just like we always do with those songs, the audience can decide for themselves whether they like it or not, but you know, you always got to approach this stuff with an open mind. Don't shut down if you're not a hip-hop fan, and I hope you've been listening you know, avidly. If you are a hip-hop fan to the songs that have been leading up to this, I hope you haven't just been waiting to hear Timbaland.
So here was the lead single off of it. Judge for yourself. This song is called Pardon Me.
Smile.
How'd you like it, Josh?
You know, I wouldn't chalk it up as my single all-time favorite Chris Cornell track, but it was definitely catchy.
In terms of pop music, I think it might be right at the top of the list for me.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, if we're considering sort of the guilty pleasure pop songs that both of us may or may not have in our music library, yeah, that's definitely ranked up there as number one.
Yeah, it's I guess you're taking the poppy kind of mold mm-hmm. and then putting in someone who, in my opinion, is one of the best songwriters of all time.
Yeah.
And it's decent.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, when you, like you said, when you put people who are monsters in their own particular way together, you usually get something that's at least worth listening to. And yeah, one of the greatest songwriters ever. I would agree with you on that with Chris. And I would argue, yeah, I mean, Timbaland is certainly probably my favorite hip-hop producer.
Kind of to end off the show here.
Awesome.
Because to anybody who's had the patience to stick around, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we've come full circle now because Soundgarden has reunited.
Yeah,
like we said, we will be seeing them in about 2 weeks' time, less than 2 weeks now.
I'm like, I have an advent calendar for this. You know, like before Christmas, and you're opening the door every day and getting your chocolate. I'm making my own advent calendar for this. I've been counting the days down for months at this point.
What are you using as a substitute to the chocolate calendar?
Pretty much my imagination. Greg. Okay, it's very vivid. Sesame Street did a lot for me as a little boy.
So, yeah, basically we're going to finish the album or the show off with a song off of they released the greatest hits mm-hmm. kind of ordeal called Telephantasm. And this was a song that they actually recorded during the sessions for Bad Motorfinger.
Way back in 1991.
91, yeah. And it never got released. But it has now seen the light of day. There's actually a video when Conan first got back onto television. Soundgarden was on like one of the very first episodes playing this song. And it sounds every bit as amazing as it did when they recorded it in 1991.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening today. Before we let you go, I want to encourage everyone to follow both Greg and I on Twitter. You can follow me at JoshCraig7. Just look me up there on the old Twitter. And Greg, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me at producer_Greg. Does that sound nerdy?
It doesn't sound nerdy. It actually sounds like a job description. You are the producer of the show, so that makes some sense.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, that's me, producer_Greg. I'll have some tweets about music and sports, and that might be about it. But, you know.
Sounds good. No, if any of us is nerdy on Twitter, it's me. I'm the guy with Skeletor as my display picture.
Right. Yeah, okay.
We've talked about this before, but guys, follow us on Twitter. We always like to be able to communicate with folks in any way we can, and we hope you enjoyed this week's show. Next week, a little preview for next week, maybe?
We'll call Canada Week, because Canada Day is on the Friday, and we're going to have a guest in here named Mike Gomes.
Uh-huh.
And we are going to be highlighting purely Canadian music.
Very excited about this one.
That is it. Just Canadian music. So it'll be... It has... From what I know of it thus far, it's going to be very different.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this one.
Three guys with very different tastes in music. Well, not very different, but kind of,
different enough.
We're coming from different areas here on this.
Trying to bring some different flavors to the table. Mm-hmm. So that'll be next week. But again, guys, thanks so much for listening. And Greg, I'll let you take this one away. This is...
Black Rain.
By Soundgarden.
Have a listen. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Bye for now.